control it. But from the highest planet down to the lowest, it's just a question of different varieties of illusion. Of course, on the higher planets, it means less illusion, and on the lower planets, it means more illusion. So there is some advantage of using our free will to progressively go from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, because at least in goodness, one becomes aware of the fact that we're actually not the controller and the enjoyer, that we're under the control of the Supreme Person, and that any enjoyment we get ultimately is derived from Him. Nothing, we're not independent, and we're not the controllers. Therefore, the Vedic literature aims at trying to direct the living entity's free will towards the mode of goodness. And there are different processes to do that. In other words, we're free to do whatever we want here. The Vedas recommend the process of yoga, not to waste your time. And as I went over yesterday, there are different types of yoga. Karma yoga. So karma yoga is, the Vedas say, hand back the stolen goods. Because we're actually, ultimately, when it comes to it, we're all thieves here. Just like if you walk into a department store and you start putting everything into your pocket. And then you're caught at the gate. And you're arrested. So then you say, no, wait a second, let me give everything back. I renounce it. So karma yoga means, more or less, to realize that we made a mistake and that we'll give everything back, the stolen goods. Because the fact that we're thieves, how do we know that? How do we know that actually we're thieves? Does anyone know? What's that? Yes, but what is the first prison cell everyone lives in? Yes, this material body, although we look in the mirror and it looks quite nice to us, we like it, but actually it's a prison cell that we're living in. Just like in the old times, they used to wrap a chain, an iron ball and a chain around someone's foot, just like Sanatana Goswami was in prison, but by an iron chain and a ball. So similarly, the material energy has put us into a prison called the material body. And the main shackle is what? Yes, sex life. Sex desire, actually. That's the main shackle that covers the living entity, so he very happily lives in this prison. And even though there's an opportunity in the human form of life to get out of the prison, still he doesn't want to get out because he thinks he'll be happy here. Prabhupada was riding down the street one day and he saw a big sign. It says, "Is there sex after death?" And it was moving. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, there is sex after death. There's sex in all the 8,400,000 species of life," and therefore, Prabhupada said, if the materialist found out that actually there is sex life after death, then they won't be afraid of death. So this is the main shackle in the material world, and to get out, and along with that, we're stealing from Krishna's energy ultimately to satisfy that desire. So we want to accumulate, as it says, pungsa striya maitu, maituni bhavang etam, tayor ridya granti mahu ato griha shetra sutapti vitera janasya moho yang ahang mameti. This false ego that we were talking about is acquired because we want to enjoy sense gratification. So the land, the house, the children, these are all the paraphernalia that just decorate pungsa and sriya. This idea is I am the male and you are the female, I am the enjoyer, you are the enjoyed. Of course, nowadays I was on the airplane and in one magazine, Time Magazine, because I always flip through it to see what's happening. And there was a priest marrying two men together. So this is, of course, it's not a big breakthrough, but you know, Time Magazine was photographing the happy couple. And as I mentioned, I was in Denmark, I guess it was actually over a year ago. As I was leaving, one devotee very enthusiastically came up to me and said, actually, Denmark has now become the first country in the world where legally the father has married his son. So this is it's quite complicated. So karma yoga means to hand back the stolen goods, and ultimately it means to decrease that anxiety for fruitive activities and sense gratification. But generally, so this is the beginning, some knowledge, some renunciation, not very clear understanding of what the goal is, but at least finding out what we're not supposed to do. That we're not supposed to become attached to enjoying the senses, or we're not supposed to be attached to getting the results of our work. And then the next stage after that, when one realizes there must be something more, or one finds something more, called Jnana Yoga. So Karma Yoga means to do one's duty without attachment, and Jnana Yoga includes renunciation and knowledge. It's further advanced. Of course, there's some renunciation in Karma Yoga, but Jnana Yoga means one is further on the path of renunciation and knowledge, at least to the point when one finds out something, transcendental knowledge, meaning that I'm not this body, and that therefore I should even become more renounced than the Karma Yoga. The Karma Yoga, you realize, is that serving lust, anger, greed simply gets me into trouble. The Jnana Yoga, you realize, is that the reason it gets me into trouble is because I'm not the body. And this covers my real nature, I'm a spiritual being. And then the Astanga Yogi, the real Astanga Yogi, he realizes the super soul through meditation. So by further development of renunciation and knowledge, then one's consciousness becomes purer, and one can concentrate on the super soul within the heart. So then one realizes that through meditation, and then finally bhakti. So for those who can't take the bhakti, at least previously, those who could understand bhakti, but could understand, of course, Karma Yoga usually went through other, before one even came to Karma Yoga, usually there were other stages like Karma Kanda, Sakam, Karma Yoga. That's what attachment to the results, which is part of Karma Kanda. So the Vedic process is generally, even before Karma Yoga, there are other stages, other steps that one would go through. So that one would gradually develop faith in the Vedic literature and gradually go through, make some sacrifice, go through some tapasya or sacrifice, and then realize a good result and further develop faith. So by the time one actually came up to Karma Kanda or Karma Yoga, is very dutifully without attachment to the results of one's work, and this is actually quite advanced. And then by doing the duty, becoming detached, controlling the senses, and gradually one realizes I should actually find out, gain knowledge and understand things more clearly. And then one comes to realize, if I'm not this body, then who's actually controlling this world? Who's actually the controller? One comes to meditating on the super soul within the heart, like further advancement of renunciation and knowledge. So the Vedic literature aims at trying to inspire us to use our free will towards one of these paths, to gradually, you know, come to the path of yoga, or if one is intelligent enough and fortunate enough, Brahmande Brahmite Kon Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Latavish. If one is fortunate enough, then he can come to the platform of Bhakti Yoga immediately, surpassing all the other yogas, which Prabhupada compares to the Himalayas, of Bhakti Yoga being like Mount Everest. And immediately start using our free will to engage in Krishna's service, including doing our duty for Krishna, renouncing the results of our work for Krishna, understanding Krishna, and eventually come to the platform of meditating upon Krishna and giving our love for Him. For as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and then giving one's love to Krishna. Yes? Nishkam Karma Yoga. Means without attachment to the results. Nishkam means that one has no attachment. So, I don't think there's any difference between that. Depends. If there, Karma Yoga implies that when one knows the goal is Krishna, But one is addicted to the results of his work, then he's said to be acting karma yoga. So nishkam karma yoga can also include being detached from the results of one's work, but the knowledge may not be there for engaging in Krishna's service. So it could be attachment to Brahman, it could be attachment to Paramatma, it could be attachment to Bhagavan, when they be engaged in nishkam karma yoga. So it's a general term for unattached activities. Seeking after the absolute, but the absolute may not be understood as clearly as, say, in real karma yoga. With what?
Renunciation and knowledge. And because I've heard your tapes, you said that this karma, karma yoga is a combination between karma yoga and jnana yoga. Is the perfection of those two?
Yeah, well, they're both together. Yeah. But the goal may not be so clear. In other words, if one is looking, if one is a Brahmavadi working to reach Brahman, then he's also engaged in this karma yoga. He has no attachment to the results. So he's engaging in the same thing. Similarly, if one is engaged in Bhagavan or Paramatma realization. So it's a general term, but it's also, it could also be Bhakti Yoga, which Kam Karma Yoga is included. I mean, the real yoga is Bhakti Yoga, and the what gives Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Sangha Yoga any result for it, because otherwise it's just an empty process, just a mechanical process. The only thing that really gives its result is the Bhakti that's put into it. Otherwise, it's just formality. So, but sometimes people put Brahman into it, or they put Paramatma into it. But even these aspects of the absolute truth, you know, they're just partial understandings of Krishna. Just like I may be working to understand Brahman, so I may be meditating on Brahman. Therefore, I have no attachment to the results of my work, and I understand. I have some knowledge. I'm not attached to the results of my work because I understand I'm a spiritual being. Therefore, why should I be involved in material activities which have nothing to do with me? So that's also nishkam karma yoga. But at the same, nishkam karma yoga could be the devotee who's absorbed in Krishna consciousness, who's in the spiritual world, so he has nothing to do with this world either. Therefore, the conclusion is we should use our free will in order to engage in devotional service. Because just like all of us who are here, we could be anywhere. I don't think, although the anti-cult movement says that the leaders shackle us with a ball and chain, and we're not allowed out. But the real truth is we're here only because of our free will. That we may understand theoretically that this is the best process, and as much as we've engaged in it and we experience a happy result from it, to that extent, then we use our free will to further engage in it. Even if we thought that this is the best process, but if we didn't get a good result from it, then why would we bother engaging in it? So it's all on the basis of free will. So Krishna has his free will. By his free will, universes come out, the avatars come down. Just like Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sijamyaham. So Krishna comes by his own free will in order to protect the pious and annihilate the miscreants. Or whenever there's a religious rise of irreligion and a decline of true religion. So it's by Krishna's free will that everything is going on. By his free will. So the avatars have their free will, Krishna has his free will, and we also have our free will, and therefore so many things are going on. The only problem is that we don't know how to properly utilize our free will for our advantage. So that's what this knowledge is meant for. So now we can go over, any questions about this? Yes.
Do we have a free will?
That's what we're talking about. Minute, we have this very small free will. Krishna, by his free will, he can create a universe. By our free will, we've created this body, or at least we put ourselves in a position where we've received our present material body. And by the proper use of our free will, we can get the body of a demigod, we can go back to the spiritual world. Or if we misuse it, we can become an ant. So we decide where we're going. That's our free will. If we didn't have free will, then why did Srila Vyasadeva compile so many Vedic literatures to give us direction? It's because we have free will, therefore we have to decide where we want to go. But our free will, it will only be manifested if we understand how to utilize it properly. The more knowledge we have, the more we know how to utilize our free will. But in order to get knowledge, you have to associate with someone who has knowledge. So our real free will is determining who we want to associate with and what we want and what we and whether we're willing to hear from them and follow their instructions and examples. It's not unlimited. We can't suddenly decide, yeah, I want to be God. Oh, okay. Because our free will is limited. But we can decide whether we want to surrender to God or not. Follow His instructions. That's our free will. And there may be different degrees of surrendering. We may decide to go to the heavenly planets. So that's some more degree of surrender. Or those we may decide to become, you know, a karma yogi or a jnana yogi or a sangha yogi. So there are different degrees of surrender. And ultimately we may decide to become a devotee. It's eternal. We never lost it. We still have the free will. We never didn't have that free will. Just like the example may be used that an extremely wealthy person, he's a multimillionaire, so he can eat anything he wants by his free will. He can choose anything he wants for breakfast, for instance. But sometimes he may ask, give me some salted peanuts. So he can have anything he wants because he's free. He has so much facility. But sometimes he may just ask for something insignificant to eat. So similarly, living entity, by his free will, he can go anywhere. He could be in the spiritual world full of unlimited bliss and full of unlimited knowledge, but he wants to get a different taste. So that's why we're here in the material world. We just want to see what it tastes like to be God. We want to taste like, and what does God mean? In the spiritual world, Krishna is the center of everyone's love and attraction. So we ourselves, the tiny living entity, decided what would it be like if I was the center of everyone's attraction, everyone's attention. So we can see, actually, this is the real struggle in the material world. Somehow or another, get people's attention and have them attracted to me. And get the taste from that. So we'll do anything. We'll jump up we'll jump up on a trampoline, trying to jump the highest. Or I seen a video that had some person, he's surrounded by these blocks, burning fire, and he's going, quack, quack, quack. We'll do anything to get some attention. Just for that moment, to get the taste. Here I am, I'm the center, I did it. So everyone's doing it. If you can't do it on television, then you come home at night and say, you know, here I am, the king of the house. Somehow or another, get some taste from that. So that's what we want to enjoy. And we were convinced, somehow or another, I'm going to become the center, and I'm really going to enjoy it. And especially how man and woman relationships work. You know, the man is going, here I am, I'm the hero. I need a heroine. And the woman's going, yeah, you're the heroine, you know. I'm surrendered. And the man said, oh, all right, I have a heroine. You know, she loves me. She's going to follow me. And then the woman said, yeah, I'm completely surrendered. All we need is, you know, and I really want to make you happy. And the way you'll become happy is we just need a few things. I need a house. I need a few kids. I need a car. All for you. In other words, there may be different ways of trying to become the center of attention, and the controller is just slightly different. There are different techniques. But that's the main aim. And we're convinced, because that's why we're here, somehow or another we'll be able to do it. And even if we're not convinced, because we don't know of anything better to do, therefore we keep on doing the same old thing, just in different ways. Yes?
Yesterday, we spoke about fake, whether it's fixed or a mixture of both fixed and not fixed. But what is exactly meant with fake?
Fake means we have no idea what we did in the past. The only indication we have is this present body. So, whatever I did in the past, Krishna knows that, because I've had unlimited lives, and I'm doing something in this present material body, because this is more or less the accumulation of some of the karma I have. And after I leave this body, there'll be a certain consciousness that I've created during this lifetime. And according to Bhagavad Gita, that consciousness will bring me on to the next body. So more or less we can conclude that my next lifetime will be arranged by Krishna according to my consciousness at the time of death and according to my past activities. Krishna will make a certain arrangement. I get a certain reaction. And that I can't change. It just keeps on going on. In other words, all I'm doing in this present lifetime, if I'm in material consciousness, I'm just adding on to the stock of my previous karma. Now, as far as I can understand, our previous karma has more or less manifested itself in the present body. More or less. Parabdha karma, aparabdha karma, whatever it is. And therefore, all I'm doing right now in material consciousness, I'm just adding that on to the sum total of my karma, and then just creating future bodies to enjoy suffering. Is that clear?
Yeah. And then spiritual activities we perform, like walking around Tulsi and chanting Hare Krishna, the effects of that, is that part of faith? Will that form our faith?
Walking around Tulsi?
It's nice. Karma, but...
Well, what does that mean? It means that karma, according to Krishna, is activities which produce material bodies. So activities which produce spiritual bodies can't really be considered producing another body, can be considered karma. It depends on my consciousness. Just walking around Tulsi won't necessarily change my fate. It depends upon my consciousness. If I'm walking around Tulsi in a devotional mood and actually coming to a higher platform of consciousness to please Tulsi and Krishna, then the result is that I won't get any reaction for it. If I'm walking around Tulsi because I'm planning to kill a Brahmin, then we may, you know, it may not have the desired result that I was expecting. So it depends upon one's consciousness. Because coming in contact with Krishna, just like putting an iron into a fire, means that the iron gets hotter and hotter until it actually is like fire. So in our heart, contaminating our heart to contaminating our senses and mind are the accumulated reactions of our past activities, which when we look out through our eyes, for instance, we're seeing the world in a certain way because of all the different types of contamination we have. But when we actually become Krishna conscious, because then the result is that these impurities are burnt away. Yataya dang sis mi do ganira, samri do ganira, basmat sakru te arjuna, Ganagni Sarvakarmani Basmat Sakrute Tata. Just like blazing fire can burn firewood to ashes, so does the fire of devotional service burn to ashes all the reactions to accumulated activity. So in Krishna's presence, the bliss and his chit shakti, actually one becomes purified by coming in contact with Krishna's chit shakti, especially Ladini shakti, burns away the reactions for previous activities. And the result is that one becomes purified. And one's whole consciousness and conception changes, and therefore instead of hankering for some material result from our work, we start hankering for some more of that bliss. We start hankering to become more absorbed in spiritual consciousness. So the result of that, it does give a result. The result is we're put into situations where we have more of an opportunity to perform the same type of activity, namely meditation on Krishna and giving our devotion to Him. If that's what we're doing when we're circulating Tulsi, that's why we're singing the song. We're supposed to be meditating on what the song means. If we're meditating, please give me one of the pleasure groves in Vrindavan Dham, a house there, a rent-free house forever, made out of Chintamani stones. If that's what we're meditating on, so I can see the divine couple in their pastimes, then the result is I'll think of Radha and Krishna, or maybe I'll think of the deities in the temple, and I'll think of Tulsi. And when I'm doing that, then all my previous, then I'm actually becoming absorbed in the fire of devotional service, and the result should be transcendental enlightenment and bliss. And my motivations, you know, should change. Maybe I'm just circumambulating Tulsi because I need some exercise. And then afterwards, like experiencing the transcendental bliss, then the result will be that I actually think that this is, you know, I can experience the happy result of becoming Krishna conscious. The material world is just based upon conception. So everyone has a different conception. The general conception is I am this body, and I'm meant here to enjoy with this body. I mean, that's the general conception that every living entity has. But exactly how to enjoy in the material world may be slightly different. Someone may be trying to enjoy in the mode of ignorance, someone in the mode of passion, someone in the mode of goodness. But one who actually comes to the mode of goodness, he realizes that there is no enjoyment in the material world. The only enjoyment is in the spiritual world. So he realizes that Brahman is the only platform of enjoyment. The devotee realizes that even Brahman is not the ultimate enjoyment. The real enjoyment is the supreme Brahman, Param Brahman or Krishna. And that the highest enjoyment of Krishna is to love Krishna, to give all my love to Krishna. So when he actually starts becoming active within, yastva atmati eva syat, atma trittastra manava, atman yeva trisantu stas, tasya karana vidyate. That one who's happy within, who rejoices within, who takes pleasure within, who's satisfied within, is actually the perfect mystic. He's liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. So devotional service actually implies that the soul is actually becoming active within. He learns actually how to become internally active in devotional service. For the materialist, generally he's presented with sense objects that are being thrown at him by his past karma, different, and he's just reacting according to that. Whereas William Shakespeare said that the whole world is a stage and everyone has their part. We have our entrances and our exits. So in the material world we have our material body and we have our stage. And more or less we're dancing onto the top of the stage. Here I am, the hero of the play. And everyone's thinking that here's the fool of the play. And we're thinking we're the hero. And therefore we're playing some part here dictated by our circumstances. But in spiritual life, one becomes dictated from within by Krishna. And therefore, he plays the part that Krishna wants him to play. Nimitra matram bhavasavasa chin. So that means he's active within. There's an active communication with Krishna. Krishna gives direction and the living entity, the soul, he voluntarily follows that direction. Not that Krishna says, why don't you do this? And the living entity says, wait a second, why did I surrender to you in the first place? It's not what I want to do. So then Krishna says, all right, you don't want to do this. Well, I have Maya will tell you what to do next. And then Maya says, well, why don't you do, you have to do this. Or you can do this, or you can do this other thing. So active within means that one is actively seeking to find out what Krishna wants to do. And after finding out what Krishna wants one to do, then one actually voluntarily, out of love for Krishna, does that. So that can only come from the soul. So that's the proper use of free will. And when one utilizes a free will like that, then he doesn't follow the dictation from Maya, which will simply produce another body. Maya says, do this. And the living entity says, all right. And then he becomes responsible for what he agrees to do. They have their free will. Some people may come in contact with a criminal, a band of criminals. So out of the person's free will, he decides to become a criminal and break all the laws of the state. So that means that Maya is like the head criminal, or at least actually sometimes Maya is compared to the police. But sometimes Maya is actually like the head criminal. Yogacchalati manasa. Arjuna is asking, yoyam yogas tvaya prokta sam yena madhusunana etasyaham napashami chanchalat vastiti in siram. Ayati shadiyopeto yogacchalati manasa aprapyan aprapya yogasam siddhim kam Krishna Krishna gachati. I got the wrong verse. Ayati shariyopedo yogas chalati manasa. You know the next one? Yeah. Prapya yoga samsidhim kam gatim krishna gachuti. So yoga chalati manasa. That means that maya, as soon as one takes a path of service to Krishna or tries to make some progress in away from maya, the maya yoga chalati manasa, maya will try to trick the practitioner by so many different allurements. Special kind of police force. Sometimes the police force does that. It's called entrapment, I think. What do they call that? When the police force comes up to you and says, actually, I want to give you a bribe. I forget what. What's that? Yeah, it's like a kind of setup. They have a special name for it. In any case, Maya's like that. Maya says, all right, you want to go to Krishna? No problem. But wait a second, just come over here. I got something to show you. Take a look. Or as the mafia said, give them a deal that they can't refuse. So Maya's like that, you know. Actually, we know you're a rascal. You know, so come over here, take a look. That's what I wanted. How did you know? So Maya also has that business, making sure that we're actually serious about Krishna consciousness, making progress. So Maya will have her. She knows exactly what we want. And on the other hand, if we become detached from all those things by becoming attached to Krishna, then the result is whatever Maya shows us, then we won't become very interested in. Therefore, there won't be any karma. But as soon as we're interested in something that Maya has to offer us, then we're accumulating karma. But Krishna, even if we're accumulating some karma because we have some motivation, still if we're on the path, Krishna also takes that into account. And therefore make arrangements for us in the future to also have an opportunity to perform devotional service again. But as we know, that even in the material world, where one is on the platform of goodness, and it is said, what is that verse about the devotee who is engaged in serving the deities? Who's engaged in worshiping the deities, but he doesn't know how to act towards other devotees, then he's said to be a Kanista Adhikari, Prakriti Bhakta. How does it start? That's the second one. Anyhow, what's that? Acharam Eva Hariye, Pujam Yakshariye Hate. So even a devotee, if we're actually not, at least on the second class platform is the platform where real devotion begins, real devotional service begins, and therefore on that platform there's a diminution of the tendency to become attached to the results of our work, there's a diminution of the false identification with the body, etc. One is actually trying to do something positively in devotional service. So that is in the third class platform, then everything is very unclear. But in the second class platform, everything is becoming clearer. And the first thing that becomes clearer is that we realize my real duty is to love Krishna. There's no question of love if it's business. But my real duty is not to get something back from Krishna, that favorite song, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV, Jai Jagadish Hari. So that's not our real duty, is to think like that. Our real duty is simply to love Krishna, to do whatever we're doing to please Him. And for the devotees, we shouldn't think that, you know, the devotees, they just take up so much space in the temple, and they, you know, they get all the Mahaprasadam, and, you know, there are only less of them, life would be better, because, you know, Krishna is nice, but, you know, his followers are sometimes a little difficult to deal with. So that attitude changes to Ishvara tad adineshu valishi. So adineshu, one is friendly. One sees that these devotees, they're actually serving Krishna that we all have the same interest. It's like we're all, if you're driving a car and the car runs out of gas, that anyone who has money and puts some money into the gas, into the tank for the gasoline, that everyone has the same interest as riding the car. Give your money and put some gasoline into the car. So similarly, Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and everyone's interest in life is to simply to supply to that reservoir of pleasure to Krishna, to serve him. The more pleased he becomes, the more everyone becomes blissful, and everyone has the capacity to give their love for him and add to that reservoir of bliss. So that anyone who does that, they're equally helping produce or create that atmosphere of bliss. Just like in Vrindavan, everyone's just adding to Krishna's pleasure. The flowers, the trees, the birds, the peacocks, the swans, the river Jamuna, the gopis, Srimati Radharani, everyone's just adding their bliss, their love for Krishna, and this is pleasing Krishna, and Krishna's pleasure is adding to everyone else's pleasure. And everyone else's pleasure is adding to everyone else's pleasure and Krishna's pleasure too. So it's just a huge transcendental setup to just produce transcendental bliss and love forever. Nice machine. Krishna recommends we join it. So that's our free will, if we want to do that, to join that system of creating unlimited transcendental happiness. So a second-class devotee, he realizes that anyone who's engaged in that business, they're actually my friend. My job is to cooperate with them and encourage them to help create more of that pleasure. And for the innocent, then he sees that my job is to inform them what their real business is, not to waste time in the material world and 8,400,000 species of life, but to join in Krishna's transcendental rasa dance. And for those who are envious, then he doesn't deal with them because he realizes it's just a waste of time. I don't have so much time to just waste it. I have to try to deal with others to convince them to become Krishna conscious. I have to try to make friends with the devotees and cooperate with their efforts to serve Krishna. And my real business is to love Krishna and serve him. So on that platform, then one is actually engaging in devotional service. On the third class platform, there's some hope in the future that if one continues on, and by good association, one can come to the second class platform. And of course, on the third class platform, one is engaged in spontaneous, unalloyed, everlasting devotional service. And he's not really in the material world, he's in the spiritual world. Yes?
What chance has the human being without Vedic literature
to change his state? Yes, as much of a chance as in the unlimited ocean, if there is one rubber tire floating, and one porpoise was floating, it was swimming in that ocean, the same chance would be as if he surfaced in one moment from that ocean and happened to go through the rubber tire. No, actually there is no chance. Without the Vedic literature, we can't do anything in terms of spiritual progress. Exactly what we mean by Vedic literature, that has to be explained also. Without direction coming from Krishna, no one can do anything. And that direction from Krishna also comes externally. So that everyone is dependent upon their environment in this material world, unless you're a liberated soul.
Take shelter.
Well, you have to find out how to do it. Unless you have the proper association, you won't find out that there's a super soul. But unless he's in a human society, he won't pray. Unless he has the right association. So unless he heard that there is a God, he'll never pray to that God. So we're dependent upon our association. Just like a child, if he's born, sometimes there were children, they were born and they somehow or another they got lost in the jungle, and they were raised like amongst bears or among wolves, and that's what they became. They acted just like a bear or a wolf. Anything else? So now we'll go over some, just in the brief time we have left. So one of the examples of, maybe everyone can give some examples of use and misuse of free will. I gave the first one yesterday with Bart Maharaj. He misused his free will and he became attached to a deer. And another example is the Shaman Takajal. There's one king named Satyajit. And Satyajit, his daughter was Satyabhama. Satyabhama. And this jewel would produce 80 mounds of gold. I don't remember exactly what a mound is, but it's a lot of gold. Every day it produced 80 mounds of gold. And wherever the jewel was, everyone would be healthy and happy. So one day Satyajit came to Dwarka. He was a resident, but he was carrying this Shaimantaka jewel with him. He was a great devotee of the sun god who had given him the jewel. And the jewel was so effulgent that when he walked into Dwarka, everyone thought that he was the sun god, that he was coming to see Krishna. And the people came and informed Lord Krishna that actually here the sun god has come. So Lord Krishna, being omniscient, he knew that actually this is not the sun god, but this is Satyajit. He's carrying the Shaimantaka jewel. And he put it into some temple. But Lord Krishna later on asked Satyajit to kindly give it to Ugrasena, the emperor, because the best thing should be offered to the king, the emperor, Ugrasena. But Satyajit decided it wasn't a good idea. He wouldn't do it. In any case, as it goes on the story, because he disobeyed Krishna by his free will, as we probably know most of the story, his brother, Prasena, took the jewel one day and began to show it off riding on his horse. But unfortunately for him, one lion came and killed the horse and killed Prasena and took the jewel away. And then later on, Jambavan came, who's the king of the jungle. He came and killed the lion and took the Shaimantaka jewel away. And at this time, Satyajit decided that actually it must have been Krishna who had killed his brother and taken the jewel. And therefore he started to spread rumors that Krishna, he asked me for the jewel, but actually because I wouldn't give it to him, he stole it. Therefore Krishna organized a party and they all went into the jungle and they found Prasena had been killed by a lion and the lion had been killed by someone and they all followed the tracks and then finally Krishna, he came to the part where Jambavan was. He entered into the cave and he saw his child, Jambavan's child, with the Shaimantaka jewel. So Krishna wanted to take away the jewel, but the nurse cried out very loud and Jambavan came and they had a fight for 29 days and nights. In any case, you know who won. I'm sure you can figure it out. Odds were on Krishna, and he happened to come out. And then he came back, and of course, Satyajit, he gave the jewel back to Satyajit, and later on, Satyajit, because he was embarrassed, he gave his daughter to Satyabhama, to Krishna to marry, and Jambavan had given Jambavati to marry. Unfortunately for him, Satyajit, because of his not giving Krishna the jewel, therefore some conspiracy was there, because he had given his daughter, he had promised his daughter to many different persons. So some conspiracy was there to kill Satyajit and take the jewel away, because Satyajit, although he gave his daughter Jambavati to Satyabhama, to Krishna to marry, he wouldn't give the jewel. Although Krishna had offered it to Krishna, Krishna said, no, you can take it. Therefore, Satvadanva. Him and Akrura and a few other people, Kritavarma, and who's the one who, Stanyadanva. So there's a conspiracy, and in the middle of the night, he came in and he killed Satyajit. So this was a reaction for his not giving the jewel to Krishna when Krishna first asked. Therefore, we have to be a little cautious about our free will, or else we might get ourselves into difficulty. Matter of fact, we have gotten ourselves into difficulty already, just being in the material world, but we have to use our free will to realize that we have to follow Krishna's directions, or else we'll get ourselves into more difficulty. Anyone else have an example of misuse of free will? Yes. Oh, yes. Can you tell us a story?
Tour with South India, and somewhere near the end of the tour, they came to a camp of the Bataharis, and they were quite degraded people. And then Kala Krishnadas, his servant, got alerted by them.
By them?
By the Bataharis already doing
that. Yeah, the women. I think, wow, here's a nice degraded group. It's so long with Lord Chaitanya, it's getting a little boring. No, they use women to allure people. That he became a lord. Yes, he misused. So Prabhupada uses that as an example that even your personal associate of God, Lord Chaitanya, you can fall down from that position. Yes. Guru. Yes. Nashto moha smrita labva tat prasadam ayachuta stito smigata sandeha karishe vachanam tava. Now I've gained my memory by your mercy, and my illusion is now dispelled. Now I am prepared to act according to your direction. Anything else? Any other examples of people properly or misusing their free will? Yes. Yes. Also, he was consoled by Akrura. And when Akrura came to Hastinapur, Krishna had asked him to go there and see what the situation was. So after seeing the situation, he saw that Dhritarashtra was unnecessarily harassing the Pandavas. And that even though he was favorable towards his son, still the Pandavas were part of they were citizens, and therefore they should be protected along with the other citizens. So in this way, Akrura said, if you don't do that, then your whole family will be destroyed by Krishna. But Dhritarashtra said, yes, your instructions are very nice, but they're going through my mind just like lightning goes through a cloud. They can't stay there because of my attachment to my family. So generally people misuse their free will because of family attachment. They say, this is perfectly all right, but I just can't act according to it. Yes. Yeah, well, Kansa kept on, even when, yeah, he sometimes uses free will, just like when Durga appeared and told Kansa, you're a rascal, why are you harassing your brother and sister like this? But actually, the person who's going to kill you has been born elsewhere. So then Kansa became very repentant and started to philosophize about how he wasn't responsible because he's not the doer. And then he let Devaki and Vasudev out of the chains, and he said, don't lament for your children, because actually we're not this body. Hanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul never dies, and you can't really blame me because I'm just acting as an instrument for the illusory energy. So he was asked for forgiveness, fell at their feet, and then later on that night he had a meeting scheduled with his demoniac ministers. And who are his demoniac ministers? Does anyone know some of their names? Who was part of his ministry? What's that? No, Kangsa. Kangsa had a very special ministry. Very famous personalities, yes. Yeah, they were all part of the ministry. There was Dainakasura, Agasura, Putana, you name them. They were all part of his group. So, of course, you know, what kind of advice are you going to get from such people? So he told him that actually your real problem, Kansa, is that you've become sentimental. That the real solution is to kill Vishnu. Vishnu is the root. So the best thing to do is cut off everything else that's supplying the root. So if you really want to get ahead in life, you should go out and kill all the cows and torture the Vaishnavas. And that will make everything nice. So Kansa in that association immediately switched, and because it says he was the greatest of all the demons. So he became very he became the most enthusiastic to kill the cows and kill and torture the Vaishnavas. So that's definitely a misuse of free will. Especially from our point of view. Anything else? Oh, yeah, yeah. Karna. Karna. What example? Another example is there is one person named Prashdra. Prashdra. He was a prince. And his job was to guard the cows at night. So he had a sword, and he'd stay up all night and guard the cows. But there was a new moon night, which means that there was no moon. So he was sitting there guarding the cows, and one tiger came to kill the cows, to attack the cows. So he heard the tiger, and he heard the cows screaming. And so he came with his sword and went to kill the tiger. Unfortunately, instead of killing the tiger, he killed one of the cows. But his sword cut the nose of the tiger, and so the one of the ears of the tiger, so the tiger was bleeding and ran off. And the next morning he woke up and he found out he had killed a cow instead of a tiger. Unfortunately for him, his spiritual master was rather intolerant, Vashistamuni. And so he cursed him that in your next lifetime you'll become a Shudra. His solution to the problem was that he decided to renounce everything. He went to the forest and became completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So at the end of his life, he went back to the spiritual world and avoided the curse of becoming a Shudra in his next lifetime. So that's called properly using your free will. So tomorrow we'll go over astrology. So I don't know if it's predicted you'll all be here, but I hope so. So thank you very much. Grantara, all the books ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanand.